Good evening. Our topic tonight is giving, but we don't have a building project coming up, although we are doing some windows, but this is not one of those messages where I'm urging more giving, but I am indeed urging you to think about giving and maybe to look at it in a way you haven't looked at it before. Our text is in Exodus 36, although we are going to wander a little bit through the Bible tonight, and it's going to be more than the permitted one extra text. So I'm breaking that rule, and behold, I have told you in advance. So Exodus 36, 3 through 7, and they're building the tabernacle now, which was a tent where the ark was kept, and there was also an altar of incense, and sacrifices were done there. They received from Moses all the contributions which the sons of Israel had brought to perform the work in the construction of the sanctuary, and they still continued bringing to him freewill offerings every morning. And all the skillful men who were performing all the work of the sanctuary came each from the work which he was performing. They said to Moses, "The people are bringing much more than enough for the construction work which the Lord commanded us to perform." So Moses issued a command, and a proclamation was circulated throughout the camp, saying, "Let no man or woman any longer perform work for the contributions of the sanctuary," and thus the people were restrained from bringing any more. For the material they had was sufficient and more than enough for all the work to perform it. Giving. To me, it's an extraordinarily interesting part of the human condition, and I like to talk about it because a person's giving opens up a window, and through the window you can see their mind and their heart, their relationship, their faith. It's all demonstrated through giving. What, when, why, how much, and to whom we give may well say more about us than any word that comes out of our mouth. Sometimes we give out of abundance. And so perhaps we got a garden out back, perhaps we have a fruit tree out back, I have some, and maybe we have such a crop we can't possibly use it. Well, we might look to give some away. I hate to waste it. Where can it do some good? Sometimes we might give sacrificially. You can see that in a church, in a building program, sacrificial giving. You can see it with parents when their children go to college. Yes, I remember those days. And the budget got quite tight. We may also give things away we don't want or can't use anymore. Such things might still be useful to somebody else. They're still good to be had out of them. Not all giving is money or goods. We might give of our time, or we might give of a talent to help in a ministry. We might stop along the road to help a stranded motorist. But if you can grasp how and why people give, you're going to go a long ways toward understanding those people. Who are they really? We give to many causes. We give voluntary, we give involuntary. We give the government in the form of taxes. Main reason, compulsion. The government takes money from our paycheck. They take money for sales tax from merchants. They take money for property taxes from homeowners. They want money from capital gains or return on investment. Compulsion is backed up by government power and might. Do not pay your income tax, IRS will knock on your door. Do not pay your property tax, the city will repossess your home and sell it at auction. Do not pay the sales tax. If a merchant doesn't pay the sales tax people will descend on them and padlock their door. But aside from compulsory giving, which I'm not particularly interested in tonight, we give to other things. We give to people. We give to the church. We give to charities. We give in many ways. And so this is voluntary giving. It's our choice to give or not. And so if we look at ancient Israel, if we look at our scriptures, what can we learn about giving? Giving indicates a state of mind, which is a willingness to give. Before anything happens, there has to be at least a willingness to consider the idea of giving. Most people have the ability to give at least something, but not everybody gives. People are not always willing to give, and the natural human condition is to keep whatever we have. Now, in my former life, when I was in the government and inspected buildings, I was in buildings where people had never thrown anything away, including newspapers and mail, for maybe 30, 40 years. You can imagine, or maybe you can't, the state of those places. They never gave up anything. A complaint that you hear sometimes about people who don't want to go to church is, if you go to church, pretty soon they're going to ask for money. Giving is also often a reflection of relationship. Giving can create a relationship. Giving can be a fruit of the relationship. So you might say, I know so-and-so, and they would like this, so I'm going to give it to them. As simple as that. We often show that we love by giving. I like you. I want you to have this. And I think perhaps all of us have something that somebody gave us simply because they wanted us to have it. And if you look at that item or you use that item, you're going to say to yourself, so-and-so gave this to me. And it's valuable to me for no other reason than that. Now, much of the giving we do in our lifetime will be to friends or relatives. We seldom give to people or institutions we dislike, if you throw out what I mentioned early on about the government. But we give to those with whom we have a relationship. And of course, some of this giving may well be reciprocated at some point in the future. Or perhaps these people have given us something in the past. So some of the giving we do can be seen as a loan or as an investment, if you will. And you see this in the New Testament, where Jesus said, if you're going to invite someone for dinner, don't invite your pals that are going to have you back next week. Bring in the crippled or the lame or the blind. They cannot reciprocate. Give them a good dinner, and your Father, who sees what you do, will reward you. Giving can be seen as an expression of gratitude for what we have been given. So-and-so gave me this, I'm going to give them that. The Christian is grateful, or at least should be grateful, for all that God has done for us, because it can't be measured. whatever God has done for us. Out of a grateful heart springs a desire to give. If we look, there's needy people all around us that need something. So John said, if you can't love your neighbor who have you seen, how can you love God whom you have not seen? The timing of giving, the manner of giving, the amount of giving, the recipient of the giving, they all indicate the condition of the donor's heart. Some are generous. Some are stingy. My grandfather was a stingy man. I remember sitting on his knee. What did my grandfather give me for my birthday, you might ask? Very simple. Nothing. Ever. My father-in-law, after I married my dear wife, was a generous man. When I went to his house, I had to be careful not to praise anything that he had there or say it was really nice, because if I did, he'd want to give it to me when I left. That man would have given me the shirt off his back. He was a really generous man. Some people are cheerful givers. Some are grudging. And this is especially true when we give to people with whom we do not have a relationship. The parable of the Good Samaritan instantly springs to mind. He gave to a man he found beside the road. He had no relationship with that man. He gave out of compassion for urgent need. That was the whole reason. Giving is also an indication of faith. God has given us all that we have. And when we give some of that to others, it shows a faith that God is going to take care of us, even lacking that which we gave. We don't have to worry about it. So in our text, the tabernacle was being built. That was going to be the center of worship of God for the nation, and the people had a mind to give at that time. Moses had a relationship with God and was building the tabernacle for God at his direction. And Moses also had a leadership relationship with the people. So we see relationship very strong in this part. He's leading them in a direction that God wished the nation to go. And so he used his leadership position in a manner that honored God. And you always have to be careful in any leadership position. If you are trying to lead people in a way that honors God, to make sure it's about God, not necessarily about you. The people were giving, they were acknowledging his leadership, and they were acknowledging his relationship with God. So the faith that Moses had in God and the obedience that he was practicing toward God was leading toward faith and obedience on the part of the people. And the way that the people gave indicated that their heart condition was a desire to follow God by obedience to Moses in the task at hand. And we see that in the text, the people gave until there was enough to finish a job and more too. They were told to stop giving. A problem modern pastors generally do not have. But not all giving follows this pattern, because the same people that gave so generously for the construction of the tabernacle also gave the gold to make what? The golden calf. In that particular case, the state of mind of the people was doubt and fear. Make us gods, for as for this Moses, we don't know what's become of him. as he tarried on the mountain, they feared he would not return. And even though God had led them out of Egypt, their faith became weak. And so they began to cast about for what they should do, providing Moses never returned. In that case, the relationship between the people and Aaron was abused. He became willing to give the people what they wanted. He was not willing to say no. And his leadership role was used in the commission of a great sin. Anybody who has ever led at any time has been called upon to say no. Essentially, no, you can't have this thing you want. Could be for any number of reasons, all of them good. Never lead anything or attempt to lead anything if you're the type of person who cannot say no. The timing was from the refusal to wait for Moses to return, and the reason for giving was to produce an idol, something visible that the people could see. They gave the gold to Aaron. And as I read his excuse, I threw the gold into the fire and out came this golden calf. You could get a better excuse out of a two-year-old. It was terrible. They were not grateful to God for what they had done. And when the idol was made, then there would be a celebration. Also not honoring to God. And so the heart condition of the people was, number one, to give in to doubt and fear. They wouldn't wait for Moses to come down from the mountain. They wouldn't wait for the word of God to come to them. They would not do the things that God wished them to do or reflect on the glory and holiness of God. Rather, they would invent their own God, which would be in their image and their likeness. And then they would celebrate just as they wished to do. It's pretty easy to see what a God invented by humans looks like and what that worship amounts to. We can also see lack of giving in the Bible. I remind you, chapter 25 of 1 Samuel, the account of David and Nabal. David, at sheep shearing time, came and asked for a present. Presents are very traditional and customary in the East, and they're expected. If you go to see somebody with power and authority, you better bring a present to show respect. That's what you do. If you're doing business with somebody and expect to make some profit, you better give a present. Now, the U.S. government calls them bribes, and it makes a lot of difficulty for American companies doing business in the Middle East. In the Middle East, they call that bakshish. You bring a present. The gift, in this particular case, would show respect and acknowledge David was the leader of a fairly large armed band. He was a possible future king. David was a person of importance in that little corner of the world. And David had it in his power to do harm from Nabal. He could take any present he wanted. He had an armed band up where the shepherds were. But he had not done so. He had treated the shepherds with all respect. He had treated Nabal's property with all respect. And so he comes and asks for a present. Now Nabal, he didn't want to give anything away. And so he insulted David instead. I don't know who you are. As far as I'm concerned, you're nobody. the refusal of a present also said the same thing. You're nobody. You're nobody. And so Nabal was not willing to give, and he didn't want to consider the possibility. He didn't want a relationship. And so he thought if he did not give, and if he insulted David because his heart was grasping and unpleasant, he was not grateful for protection that David and his band gave to his shepherds. And so he spoke harshly and sent him away. He said, look, I saved myself the cost of a present. The only thing that saved his life was the fact that his wife was far more perceptive than he was. And she went and took a present to David and staved off the trouble. Now, if we turn to chapter 1 of Malachi, we find that what we give is a reflection on our hearts as well as whether we give. Verses chapter 1, 6 through 8 speak to giving the blind or the sick or the lame as offerings. That which is really not good enough to keep, we can give that. We give that to the Lord. The Lord is not pleased with gifts like that. And so we don't have sacrifices in the temple anymore, but all of us have a household. And so if we say, well, this is not much good, let's give it away, that's a reflection on our mind and heart. If we say, what do you think about this? Is it good enough to give it away? Or should we better throw it away because it's not good enough to give? That's also a reflection on our hearts and mind. In the old days when they had missionary barrels, I've heard stories of some of the things that came in the missionary barrels, which really should have been thrown away instead. But perhaps it was easier to give them away. But it's all a reflection. Parable of the rich farmer in chapter 12 of Luke is all about what? Not giving. He had too many crops to store. He was going to tear his barns down and build bigger ones. So he could what? Keep everything. There's no hint of giving, whether to the Lord or to the poor in this account. My grandfather never gave anything away, but I didn't see him loaded into his casket at his funeral. He didn't take any with him. The emphasis in the mind of our farmer is on his possessions, his stuff. How's he going to keep it? How's he going to store it? How's he going to use it? How's he going to enjoy it? And the caution from the Lord to this man who intends to keep everything is that his soul will be required of him that very night. If his whole life consisted of the things he owned, who would own that life after he was gone? Not him. In Mark 12, 41 to 44, the widow put in 2 lepta, which were small copper coins amounting to 1/64 of a denarius. A denarius was one day's wages. As he observed this, Jesus said, she gave more than the rich donors, as she gave all she had rather than giving out of abundance. Think of her faith. She gave and she trusted God to provide for her. What did she give? She gave everything she had. If we read chapter 5 of Acts, we meet Ananias and Sapphira. And at that time, the church was giving a considerable amount to help support the members that were in need. It said there wasn't a poor person among them. And so, while it's not written in the text, knowing human nature as I do. I am assuming that the people who sold property and brought the money to the apostles' feet were well thought of in the congregation. Now, Ananias and Sapphira, they wanted to be admired by the church for giving, and they desired that admiration more than they desired to give. My dear old dad told me a story. There was a man up in the Little Ellery Center Church that once a year would give $100. We're talking a long time ago now, and that was a lot of money. And so they tooted the horn and they rang the bells for this fellow that gave $100. And as my dad told me the story, he was disgusted. And he said there was an old woman in the church that gave $2. But she gave $2 every week. And he said to me, they never rang any bells for her. There was never any praise from the pulpit for her. It was all for the guy that gave $100 once and never gave anything else during the year. Of course, Dad took the collection and counted the money, so he knew. He said, she gave as much and more as he did. And she gave it faithfully. I think that would bear a little on this account of Ananias and Sapphira. So this was a reflection on their willingness to give, their hearts, and their faith. Because they had faith in the money that they kept back. They decided to give part of the money and let the church think it all had been given. That way they could have the best of both worlds. The only cost was a little lie. Their punishment for the deception was severe and dramatic. And you can think a minute about their giving and the giving of the poor widow who gave all she had. Well, how then can we look at these various accounts and apply them to our daily lives? There's a few principles here we can apply. As a congregation, it's good to give enough. In our text, there was enough to finish the job and more too. And so there's various jobs in a local church that need to be done. What would I say to this congregation? I would commend this congregation. The congregation has a history before I was ever here of giving, a heart for giving, and the giving has been enough. And so in that respect, I would say you're doing very well. As for personal giving to the individual, I would say give good things. Good things. For anything you wish to give away, think of yourself as the recipient of the gift and whether you would be glad to receive it. Like the blind or crippled offerings that the Lord rejected, never give away things that should really be thrown out. Even if someone accepts it, they might just throw it out themselves. And it does not reflect well on you as the giver. Enhance and build your relationships by giving. You never know what giving can do. You don't. 20 years from now, a person could look at something and say that you gave that to them. Even after you're gone, some of us are older than others, you might be remembered for the things you gave. Don't wait until you can give something big or elaborate. Remember the poor widow who gave what she could. Remember Dorcas and all the widows were showing the clothes that she made for them while she was yet alive. Small things can mean a great deal if given at the right time and with a caring attitude. Think about small things. Doesn't have to cost a lot, but don't let that hinder you. Our society is way too focused on money. Get your eyes away from money. If you can cook, give a meal. If you can sew, sew something. If you can paint, give a picture. If you have carpenter skills, mend something. Encourage someone who is down. Encourage someone. Change a tire. Give a ride. Send a card in the mail. Go visit someone in the hospital. Call up on the phone, ask how they're doing. In other words, engage your mind, engage your heart to think about the needs of other people and what you might possibly do to meet those needs and make today a brighter today for them. Don't wait till tomorrow, because tomorrow is in no way guaranteed. Do it today. Avoid the attitude of Nabal and the rich farmer who didn't want to give anything away. Both of them had enough and to spare, and their desire was just to pile up more and not let anything escape from their grasp. Don't give grudgingly. If it troubles you to give, then work on your heart, which will then be reflected in your giving. Perhaps in order to give, you might need to embrace a little simpler lifestyle. Have faith that as you give, God will take care of you and you'll have enough. Jesus said that when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. This is to avoid the situation like Ananias and Sapphira, who chiefly desired the credit for giving, and they couldn't bring themselves to part with the entire sum. Some people will always know you gave, but don't necessarily make a production out of it. Giving is an end in itself. Giving is enough. It's not a means to an end, whether it be honor in the church or authority. I remember hearing this comment one time. We will give the money for the new carpet, but I have to pick the color. The names are not given to protect the guilty. Consider sacrificial giving. It's fine to give out of abundance, as the Lord has given us abundance. But have you tried giving a little more? The poor widow gave all she had. In many ways, our missionaries who go out on the field give up their regular lives to serve. We have Jackie Halliday out on the field. She stepped out there. She's not doing any of the things in America the young people do. And she's out on the field becoming basically a whole new person right now. She'll be different when she comes back on furlough. I can assure you of that. We often expect our pastors and other servants of God in various fields to adopt an austere lifestyle in order to live on what they are given. Each and every person can give, sacrifice perhaps a little more than they do. And if I could leave you with a final thought, it would be this. Give and step back and see what it does in your heart. you may well surprise yourself and others. We'll have our closing hymn now.